Sam Ackerman is in Tauranga. Hi, Sam.
Kia ora.
We're getting to the business end of some competitions, or at least time to switch on, you're saying, for Super Rugby.
Yeah, look, let's be fair. I don't think that Super Rugby has captured the imagination in the way that many would have hoped it might have this year. I don't think it's been a classic season to date, and I don't mean to dismiss the success of the Chiefs and whatnot, but New Zealand hasn't been gripped in Super Rugby fever. Now, as we reach this stage of the season, we are here with one round to go before the playoffs. Some permutations are of interest. Some things there could be a shake-up, if you like, come the end of this weekend. But the real drama, if you're really focusing, will be on the Super Rugby fortunes of the Highlanders. Of the five New Zealand franchises, and again, I don't mean to be glib about Moana Pacifica, but the five traditional New Zealand franchises, the Highlanders are the ones in jeopardy. So we know that the Chiefs will finish top. Barring disaster, the Crusaders are finishing second, and the Blues are a pretty good shot at third, no matter how the cards fall. And the Hurricanes will probably end up fifth, no matter what. Now, the Highlanders currently sit in eighth spot of the eight teams that make the playoffs. They had to play the Blues, a very tough proposition for them, playing the Blues in Auckland. So it'll be definitely the game of the round to watch. Should be intriguing, as we had spoke about last week, the drama of Aaron Smith's final home game. This could be his final ever game. So the ball's in the Highlanders' court. If they can get a Jaguar win, then they can secure their future. But otherwise, they're relying on other results. And I tell you what, if the Highlanders miss out, there may be a little bit of sneaky history there with the Fijian Drua. They're hosting the Reds this week. And you know, the Reds are a decent side, but you know, Fiji have proven themselves in Fiji to be a very capable outfit. So they could be the ones to sneak up in there. But I wonder for the teams that are locked away. I'm talking about the Chiefs. I'm talking about the Crusaders in particular, and the Highlanders. The Hurricanes. They're going to finish fifth, kind of win, lose or draw against the Chiefs. Against the Crusaders this weekend. So, do you keep the cue in the rack? Do you treat it like a final? Do you go in there and give everything you've got? Because we know the Crusaders have had some horrible injury runs to the point that brought essentially John Arfoa out of a long form of retirement playing overseas. He hasn't been seen in these shores in years. And they you know, bringing out the old timers, Ryan Crotty training with them this week as well. So do you go hard? Do you treat this like the dress rehearsal for the finals, or does the cue go on the rack, Catherine? What do you do when you've got those kind of permutations going in your head?
I don't know. Don't think about it too much.
Yeah. I think a rugby player just goes out to win, right? But it, as a coach and as you're thinking about, well, we've seen all these injuries. Julian Savvy is the latest out for the rest of the Super Rugby season now, because any decent injury now is the season over in Super Rugby.
So it's
context.
That bad. It's that bad, yeah. That they actually have to weigh up whether they can have any more injury.
Pretty much, if you get out there and you go, tell you what, I think we're going to bench him. Let's run the reserves out here. We can't afford to run these guys into the ground ahead of what will be a very big few weeks. And the finals do have some great matchups coming up. And the reason you want to finish in the top four is because it'll get you home advantage for the first week. So that's great news. We'll see three home games for New Zealand. That's wonderful for that first week. And you imagine after that, there's a good chance that the rest of the games are played here too. But she'll be an intriguing weekend. I'm definitely think that the intensity steps up. Certainly Blues Highlanders will have a sudden death feel to it.
Thanks very much for that one. Okay, now look, this is big. Sam Whitelock, he's one of those players, he's got to the point where you always just expect to see that big, slightly greying beard in every lineup, in every line-out. And also there's the captaincy as well. This is another sort of indication of changing of the guard of a kind.
Yeah, we're used to seeing this, aren't we? Players announcing that after the World Cup cycle, certainly ones that have been as well tenured as the likes of Sam Whitelock say, well, we're going to go overseas, or some retire, but yeah, go overseas to keep their rugby going for a lower level of intensity than Test football, as also quite a lot more money than they were getting here as well. So you can't blame them for that. And service like Sam Whitelock, no one can jump up and down, but he's been such a mainstay for obviously the Crusaders, but also the All Blacks for so long that you do take him for granted. I think him and the Brady Retallick combination at their heyday, I think we were very guilty of taking what is one of our greatest ever locking combinations for granted. So I think we should be savouring the moments we have his skills in there. But, you know, think about Scott Robertson, who has a very close connection with this man with the Crusaders. He must be wondering if every experienced head's going to go overseas at the end of this this season. I mean, a rebuild, it's a full rebuild for the All Blacks if there's no one with those that kind of depth to pick on. So I think he might be keen for a couple of them to stick around at least, but he wants to go overseas and play in France and play alongside his brother Luke, so you can't blame him for all that. And let's hope he can go with one last World Cup trophy under his arm.
There's that, and there's also, you know, it's a very new era, new coaching style. Part of the argument for putting Robertson in there was to have a real sort of clean break, I guess, in thinking and in style of rugby, although that seems so dictated by the rules and the refs at the moment. So, hey, I mean, what it will test is the public's tolerance of a year or two of rebuilding.
Yes, and I think that a lot of it will depend on how the All Blacks go this year. If it's a World Cup success, or you know they run right through the end, then there'll be high expectations on Scott Robertson to go further. If there is a poor result and it doesn't go the way this World Cup should, with the talent at their disposal, then I think people might be a bit more lenient. So there's a lot of factors there, but look, absolutely a clean-up. But Sam Whitelock is a Scott Robertson guy. Scott Robertson has put so much faith in him, made him a leader of all the teams he's involved with. So guys like that, he's used to leaning on, not having that, that will be a real test for him.
Okay, big netball final. It's all Auckland, but it should be a goodie.
Yeah, it should be. I think it's a wonderful result. Look, it's not when we saw the split of the Mystics and then the Stars joining, people were, you know, a bit kind of concerned that, you know, there wasn't enough depth and it was, you know, the city couldn't handle two teams. But here they are hosting a final, a local derby being pushed forward with some very capable players and a very strong rivalry to play to. I know that it's only been going for a few years now, but every time they're on the field, there does have that level of intensity to it that you want to see from a local derby. And I've always appreciated that, with no matter where they were on the table, that the Stars and the Mystics did turn it out for each other when they stepped up on court. So listen, I think that it is the Mystics to lose. The Stars did wonderful to knock out the Pulse. That was an incredible performance to take out a team as experienced, a defending champion side like the Pulse. But I think that you don't often see someone come through that eliminator from an outsider point of view, then go through to win the grand final. But it's in Auckland, and no matter what, we know that the trophy's staying there. And I wonder whether the rest of the country does their whole, it's just Auckland and tune out, or if they enjoy a good contest. I mean, we as a nation like to watch Origin. I mean, it doesn't really, you know, none of them are our team, state of Origin. It's Queensland versus New South Wales. But, you know, a good rivalry, it draws you in.
It does, but a good contest does too. So let's see. Now, the Warriors, goodness, is this the first time they're ever playing the Dolphins? What's the story?
Yeah, so the Dolphins are the brand new spanking team to the competition this year. They're in their first season and they're going very well. They're coached by Wayne Bennett, who even I'd say just neutral observers will have heard his name. He's coached over 900 games in the NRL. He knows his way around a victory as well. Does he what? He's an incredible coach who's done great things with this side. But it's this little symbiotic relationship here where when the Warriors were doing it tough and during COVID and stuck over there. They were based out of Redcliffe. This is before the Dolphins came through. So all their players who weren't playing first grade were playing in the Dolphins in the Queensland Cup. So there's this tie-in together and they built a relationship. But I think that, again, leads to the chance for a little bit of rivalry. There's a lot of Kiwi players, a lot of former Warriors, Cody Nikarima, Ewan Aitken, who was the Warriors Player of the Year last year. They're Dolphins now. A bunch of Kiwi players as well, like Jermaine Disarko's in there, Jesse Bromwich, Jerry Marshall-King, who is the brother of Benji Marshall. Kenny Bromwich is in there too. And a guy, if you're watching the game and you're looking for a cult hero, is a guy called Valence Tafade, and they call him Val Meninga because he's just this big unit of a man. He is such a character. He scored a couple of tries in his debut. He runs freely in the centres, and he just doesn't have that body type for it. So he's got cult hero written all over him. So very much looking forward to seeing him play live. But it's a big game for the Warriors. They sit only one win behind the Dolphins in eighth spot, but they could really use to start stringing a little bit of consistency together and learn from the mistakes. And if anyone's going to mount smart, just stay on the sidelines, please. No more pitch invasions. We've had a guts full. That's enough.
What's this fuss over Devin Conway having an opinion about himself? Not allowed, apparently.
So, in case you missed it, Devin Conway, a New Zealand international cricketer, was a key part in the IPL victory for his side, and that, you know, he was stoked. He was, you know, player of the match. He had hit some wonderful strokes, as he's capable of doing. And he said afterwards that it's the best win of his career. Now, New Zealanders, and just New Zealanders, I'll say, jumped on social media and jumped up and down going, how can he say that? How dare he have that opinion? Does he not remember being part of the Test World Championship win? Look, obviously, that was a huge moment for New Zealand sport, and we'll remember that more than some IPL event. But who are we to tell Devin Conway on RNZ? He had to, next day, he came back in and backtracked and going, I kind of meant the best of my T20 career, is what he tried to change his words to. But he can feel how he wants. I really hate the people jumping on athletes and saying, how dare you feel the way you feel about something that involves you, which I just watch from the sideline.
How dare you have your own feelings and thoughts?
Just mental.
Yeah, it is. Okay, now the French Open tennis. I mean, it's always been seen as a classic. It's one of the big four, of course, and it's that weirdo clay surface, which I don't understand how people just don't pull their hamstrings all day, every day. But anyway, somehow they make it work. Who's in the lineup, and is it going to be a classic or not so much this year?
Well, I feel like a hypocrite here, Catherine, because I've been saying for years, I just want to see the new breed come through and challenge those big guns, challenge the Nadals, challenge the Djokovic's, and obviously previously the Federer's of this world. But now they're in charge and they're top of the rankings and they're around. I find it boring. I'm not invested. And I think part of that is because there hasn't been a great passing of the baton. No one's come through like you saw with the Federers and the Nadals, who came in and they conquered the Agassiz and the Sampras's. They earned their spot. Whereas I feel like the big names just kind of fell over and left these guys to defend for themselves. So I do feel a bit like a hypocrite. I'll wear it. I'll say it. But and Novak Djokovic is of course there, and he'll be the favourite in the eyes of many. And I mean, he's most action he's causing at the moment is his comments regarding Kosovo, and you know, it's again sharing his opinion and getting everybody worked up on that as well. Slightly more politically charged than what your favourite game of your own career is. Absolutely, but there's been some great stories coming out of the French Open. I think that casual observers of sport don't get into tennis the way they used to without those big names. And I think the French Open was always one because it is so bizarre. It's watching them slide around on clay at an inhospitable time of night to watch tennis in this part of the country. I just feel that the sport needs somebody to kind of grab it by the scruff of the neck and say, watch me. Because right now, it's great athletes, but no one's screaming, watch me.
Okay, and that's that personality of the right kind, really,
that's
accompanying
right.
them as well. Now, big shout out. There's a lot of awards. Awards season. There's the Voyages. There's the Radio Awards. There's all sorts going on at the moment. Always slightly weird, isn't it, to have awards for doing your job? But on the other hand, let's celebrate those who do it really well. And sort of one of our own. We borrow her from, with gratitude, from stuff.co.nz, but one of your fellow commentators here, Dana Johansson.
Yeah, thrilled for Dana. She was named the Sports Journalist of the Year, the TP McLean Shield, going her way. And for those who hear Dana on the show, they know how astute she is and how switched on. But she has carved an incredible career for herself, and the development of her storytelling as a national correspondent has been a wonderful. And she does a lot of important stories for sports, stories that wouldn't get told otherwise.
She's an investigative sports reporter.
She is, and she really does not mind asking a tough question, does our Dana? Look, she beat a wonderful field of journalists as well, including Dylan Cleaver, who I think is one of the best going around. Susan McFadden's wonderful, Christopher Reeve from the Herald as well. So a great lineup, but you know,
it's a tough
one of ours. We'll claim her and give her the pat on the back.
It's a tough gig to cover because a little bit like politics, no one's ever going to say anything on record, really. But what she's done, whether it's in some of what's going on with some of the professional sports teams, some of the Olympic sports teams, some of the controversies surrounding coach behaviour, treatment of athletes, and her other one. She got pretty pretty in behind what was happening with the votes over the All Blacks coach round one. It's a hard sport to really get in behind, so to speak, and she's had a great stable of stories. Thanks very much, Sam Ackerman, our sports commentator.